Every play, every stat, every breakdown, on their own they're essential, but altogether they're undeniable. Introducing Huddle Instat, a new advanced data platform that integrates with sports code and every Huddle product you rely on to create an all-in-one data powerhouse. Huddle Instat's advantaged tagging and next-level stat reports help you develop your team, and its global film library helps you find the missing pieces to get the most out of every second of film. Learn more at huddle.com/aquicktimeout.
Back this week is longtime high school and college coach and current coaching consultant for Savvy Coaching, Mark Cassio. Best thing that you've seen either from the tournament, the first couple rounds, or even the end of the year conference tournaments?
I could be completely wrong on this. First thing that comes to mind, which, by the way, thanks for having me. This is always fun. Looking forward to talking hoops, especially at this time of the year. Could be wrong on this. Interested to get your opinion, actually. I feel like the games are higher paced than regular season games. I thought Tennessee, Texas had really good flow. I thought Texas A&M, Houston last night was up and down. Man, it's a lot of the teams, a lot of the games have been more in the full court. I don't know if that's just because stakes are higher or I don't know, but I feel like a lot of college basketball in season, especially conference play, slows down to a grind in the half court. So am I wrong on that?
I mean, the Alabama Grand Canyon game was just flying up and down the floor.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't looked at scoring numbers. I feel like actually in some of the games, at least, the scoring is down, even though they're playing at a higher pace. I don't know if that has to do with just better defensive teams or maybe just better defensive teams. I don't know. Shot selection maybe at times. Unless I went back and looked at all of it in particular, maybe that's just the games that I end up picking up and watching. Are you a big play guy? You watch any sets? It seems like more coaches pay attention to those kinds of things this time of year than any other time of year.
For sure, coaches do. I do too. I am notorious for watching a game, writing down timestamp. So like two that I actually have on my list were 12:35 second half Charleston Bama. No idea what that means until I go back and look, because that was the first round. And then I have Texas-Tennessee first half, 10-minute mark, Texas offense. I remember that one. I really loved the pace that they were getting into their pistol stuff. So it looks like trigger, guard-to-guard pass, shoot out of the corner, and then you have that like pistol zoom handback option. A lot of people run pistol or pistol concepts, but I just love the pace that they ran it. So I'm really looking for more of those things, because this kind of goes towards offseason, which I know we're talking to. So maybe this is the segue. This is the way I did it as a head coach. And now as a consultant, I encourage coaches and I help coaches all over the world do this, is think about actions or concepts that you want to run. If pistol is one of them, then I see, okay, Texas is getting into pistol like that organically throughout the possession. That's what I'm looking for. Like, give me the trigger, right? That's going to get me into that action. That's what I look for in these things. Here's what I would say about sets. Maybe there's a misconception that I, as a coach, did not run sets. That would be false. Sometimes we went off the reservation. We're like, hey, we got to line up in horns and run this, or a box and run this. That was just fewer and far between. And I see teams run it, and it's just different philosophy. It doesn't resonate with me as much, but you run like floppy to get this catch here, then there's a pin down, then there's a stagger, and then it's like you're doing all of that just to get the ball to this player right here. And what if that doesn't work out? Now you're in like the last 10 seconds where, okay, now we're just getting into a ball screen. So yes, I know you're wearing down the opponent with setting a bunch of screens. Who does this really well? There's a college team that does this really well. But anyway, I would rather, and Houston did this a lot last night against Texas A&M, is run things to get the ball with a player or a playmaker with an advantage. And your shot is likely going to come out of dominoes the play after the play, rather than just let's run all these actions to get a shot here. I look at it more. So when I'm watching these games, to answer your question, I'm looking at more of like, what can we run to get our best players an advantage? And who knows what shot comes after that, but I know it's going to be a big advantage when we're 9 or 7.
Mm-hmm. I saw JJ Redick talking about this, the idea of if you know something is going to work or create an advantage for you, why do you do 15 things before you do that thing? To your point, the possession goes on longer and then, oh crap, it didn't work. All right, somebody jacks up a shot with 2 seconds left. Like,
yeah,
and, why not just do it from the very beginning?
Yeah, and I got to start just trusting my gut on that. Like in a lot of ways, I feel like it just makes complete sense to me. And so it's cool to hear JJ say that, because, you know, the thought process in my mind is exactly that. It's like, okay, so you ran all of that to get to this action. I get the idea of, you know, getting a ball reversal or two and all, but like, do you have to do that? That's my thought process when watching. So it's pretty cool to hear him affirm that.
What teams are doing in regards to all 5 players on the floor? It seems we're starting to actually look like professional teams overseas and NBA. It's kind of gone overseas, NBA, and now college teams are starting to do it, where it's not just Zoom. Like, I saw a Horns play last night where they were just going with kind of a horn Zoom in the middle of the floor, like the middle third of the floor. But what they did at the beginning was they took the 2 corner guys and literally just crossed them underneath the basket. And by just crossing them underneath the basket, it kind of negated help, wherein, you know, you do a Zoom in the middle of the floor and help sitting there watching the whole thing, like, all right, I'm about to help here.
Yeah.
And just like keeping guys occupied while creating whatever action in the middle of the floor you want to create an advantage, then opens up easier shots and better shots and that kind of thing. So I just think teams have done a better job, and it's not just in Horns, boy. There's a lot of different plays I've seen. You talked about the pace. I think everybody finally paid attention to Colorado State and Nico Medved and his team running not just Princeton stuff, but Princeton with pace. And, yeah, you know, flipping it before they actually started going into chin series, and not just, yeah, well, everybody does that. Yeah. But the pace in which they do that and their ability to string actions together with that pace created a lot of open shots for them. So I guess that goes back to our original thing. You're right. I think more teams are playing with better pace. Whether or not they make the shot is something else. But yeah, the pace in which they play.
Let me piggyback 2 things off what you said there, because I thought it was good. So like the horns and just like crossing those corners, I've always made the analogy with that is like it's pre-snap motion in football. Yeah. You know, like, can we send a receiver across the formation? And if they're in man, does that just get defense a little bit behind, you know, and we sneak them out into the flat? I don't know anything about football, but you know, but that's the idea, is like just loosening up the defense, right? Can we just make it a little bit easier on ourselves by getting a little bit of movement? Colorado State is always a great team to watch. I love all the concepts that they blend together. And you mentioned the pace in which they run stuff. And I would actually encourage coaches to evaluate themselves on that, kind of an off-season project. Look at your actions. If you're happy with the actions that you're running, start to evaluate it, and how quickly are we getting in and out of these things? Like, can we do what we do better? And then you also mentioned sequencing actions, like running an action after an action, the principle of defense can't guard 2 in a row. So maybe you don't need a new offense. Maybe you need a new pace to your offense or another action you can sequence behind it. And maybe that's something that you steal from these March Madness games.
We were talking about going straight to your scoring action or the action that you know is going to create an advantage. I was literally sitting, it was one of our last couple games just a week or two ago. We were at our national tournament. We were playing a team where I felt pretty comfortable. Like, we had a big lead, and I felt if I ran certain actions, we were going to score off of it. But there was still like 10 minutes left in the game. And I remember sitting there on the bench thinking to myself, I could call this and we could score off of it. But there's only 22 seconds on the shot clock right now. Do I really want to turn this into something very quickly that we're scoring off of? And then I thought, that's the end of the year, whatever. And so we just ran it and we scored off of it. I mean, we ended up winning the game by like 30 or 35 points or something like that. But I just wonder, or is it just habit that we're running through a bunch of stuff because we are thinking to ourselves, I don't want to get into a up and down fast pace? What are your thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, there's always that, and especially with the shot clock, right? There's always that, you know, you have to take a shot within 30 seconds, but how quickly do we want this shot? We had a call, we would call it milk, where we were just milking clock and then we would go at a certain time. I would say though, like, I think some coaches get a little too conservative too early. Mm-hmm. And if you think you can score, well, that's the best way to win, right? But one thing you could kind of hedge your bet a little bit, or maybe a little compromise, we would run that like false motion. We call it, like, we had a movement package where we could move people, like just pre-snap motion, right? Move people, move the ball, loosen up the defense to where it not only makes that action that we're about to get into a little bit more effective maybe, but at least we're going to burn 8 to 10 off the clock. So by the time you get it across, let's say we're in the, you know, lower 20s, and then you're getting that shot around 10 instead of getting the shot around 20 or so. So might be a way to little compromise there without taking away the aggressiveness of your team.
I made a comment on Twitter over the weekend. I'm not going to say which teams, but I was watching some pretty highly ranked teams, and it seemed like spacing and lack of ball movement, it continued on throughout the entire game. So it wasn't like it was just one player or a lull they were in. You know, I enjoy NBA basketball. I'm guessing that a lot of the listeners that we have don't necessarily enjoy NBA basketball. I'm of the opinion when they say it's ISO ball and selfish and that kind of thing, I actually don't necessarily think that. In my opinion, Kevin Durant has the ability to create his own advantage. I don't need to run five things. And you may not like the fact that he dribbled 15 times or took that shot or whatever, but he has the skill to be able to do that and still score. At the college level, the guys just don't have that kind of skill to do that. But I still feel like some teams are acting like they do.
Agreed. I will even say this. I like to watch NBA basketball for an offensive, through an offensive lens. And whenever I watch the NBA, like it doesn't matter what game it is, I'm like, they're just so good. Like just not only the players, but the coaches too. Like just the stuff that they run. It's such good action with such good spacing. I do know that the NBA 3-point line is further, so it's naturally going to be spaced. You can also play a little bit more ISO, well, a lot more ISO ball in the NBA because the defensive three, right? So to your point, like, well, college, we don't have the defensive 3 seconds. So you should play less ISO, right? Because teams can load up and help. I also think there's a misconception of how much ISO ball there is in the NBA, I guess. I did a really deep dive into like every single NBA team last year. So over the summer, May, June, July, I would just pick a team and watch like an hour of film on them every day and just cut a bunch of clips. A lot of it was ISO in the post. Like, let's get them on the post, everybody else spread, but you're collapsing the D and then you're in dominoes and then we get that beautiful basketball. I've seen, to the college point, I like watching college basketball because of the fandom, the nostalgia, the, you know, the pageantry of college sports. So I love, you know, like the brands, right? Like when Duke's on, I'm probably watching Duke. I fall into those buckets. I have seen a lot of teams poorly spaced, just almost over movement, where the old, like, hey, if you don't have the ball, you need to be moving. I think if you watch the NBA, that's, you know, the principle of standing versus spacing. You could be standing somewhere and really hurting your team's spacing, or you can be standing somewhere and giving your teammate space. So just make sure you're in the right spot on the floor. I saw a team just cutting everywhere, and it might have been your tweet, but very poor spacing. And then you see a bunch of guys standing around with one dude dribbling it a lot. And that could be just as detrimental as constantly cutting too. So I think there's that happy medium there. What I always wanted in our offensive game is to have a great balance between ball movement and player movement. I think something that coaches, I would look at it through the lens of, do we need to run something to create advantage? To your point, Kevin Durant, we probably don't need to run anything for him, right? Just spacing gives us an advantage. Once we create advantage, we don't necessarily need to move if we're properly spaced. The movement that I would encourage would be a dunker relocating and some burn cuts from the perimeter. And then obviously you're always adjusting your movement to dribble penetration, but usually that's around the arc. So we don't really need to crack the shell as a cutter unless we have advantage. So the principle that I would operate under would be cut to the rim with advantage. If not, hold your spacing, let the ball do the work, where we can get that good balance between ball movement, player movement, where we're not just moving the ball east to west, and we're also not just running around just for activity.
A Quick Timeout podcast is presented by Dr. Dish Basketball. Dr. Dish machines are the most advanced shooting machines on the market. If you haven't already, join top programs like the Miami Heat, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Duke Blue Devils, and countless others, and upgrade to Dr. Dish Basketball. And now, save an extra $300 on select models when you mention Quick Timeout Podcast. To find out more, visit drdishbasketball.com.
Hey coaches, we know you're invested in the next generation of athletes, so why not give them the star treatment this season with Game Changer? Introducing Game Changer, a free app that provides you with data to make strategic decisions and to deliver memorable moments to your team and its fans. Keep parents, friends, and supporters engaged like never before. With Game Changer's free live streaming, fans can catch every jump shot, every steal, every victory from the palm of their hand, no matter where they're at. And with real-time scorekeeping and detailed star tracking, fans get live score updates while you get stats for your team that can build all season long. Post-game, you and your staff can review full game footage while your athletes get automatically generated highlight clips of every scoring play, assist, rebound, steal, and block. Engage your players, empower your coaching decisions, and give the thrill of watching every play unfold in real time this season. Download Game Changer now in the iOS or download Game Changer now on iOS or Android. Game Changer equips your team with the tools they need to succeed. Download it today and make this season one for the books. Game Changer. Stream, score, connect.
Women's tournament is going on as well, and you spent the last 2 years at the college level coaching women's, and I'm interested to hear from your perspective the differences between the two in regards to the things that we've just been talking about here. And I ask that because I'm sure people have heard about the attention that the women's game has gotten, even more so than the men's game, the style of play and differences maybe, and things that coaches even could adapt that maybe the women's game is doing better or differently than the men's game.
I think it's more in the half court. I think the women's game does a good job of playing through the post. And even if they don't have a dominant post player, they use that to flatten the D, create gravity, get them in dominoes, which I think more men's teams or even high school teams could adopt that. And then they are more, I find, more set pace oriented or more continuity motion. You see a lot of like Euro ball screen in both the men's and the women's game. I always, again, like it goes to pace. Like when I see that, I'm like, okay, like I know what they're running, but what nuance do they have in there? Like when do they break off? When do they break away? And also what is the pace? Because I think one thing with Euro ball screen, which you see a lot, is sometimes it's really slow and it's just kind of flat. And then sometimes it's got really, really good pace where it almost sneaks up on you. Like, oh, what are they running? And it's like, oh, Euro ball screen. They're just doing it really well.
Going forward, coaches here in the off season, kind of thinking about wrapping up the year. And then also maybe even we want to change some things that we did last year. Any kind of warnings or suggestions or even processes that you went through?
Yeah. The first thing that I did out of season. So this is something that I got from Mike Nabors years and years ago when he was at Washington. I made some tweaks to it just to fit a little bit more of our program and just how the game has changed in on the court, but also off the court, like some mental health stuff or how recruiting has changed, right? With transfer portal, NIL. So, and we call it like a savvy identity checklist, and it's on our website. But if you reach out to me, I will give it to you. It gives you basically an A to Z checklist that I would use to reflect and refine on everything that we do. This, it goes from what we run offensively against man, zone, junk, a matchup, defensively, rebounding systems, all those things that it's kind of top of mind for coaches, all the way down to like bench decorum. You know, like, well, do we need to change where our coaches sit? Do we need to change what our timeouts look like? Do we need to change our pregame meal? Did we eat too early? Did we eat too late? Did we eat the right stuff? So that would be a great resource that I will gladly share with everybody. And I think just reflecting on those things is going to stimulate your thinking and give you a lot of good ideas. And I would talk to other coaches. Hey, how did y'all handle this, right? Coaches in the area that you respect or experienced coaches. And I would send that to all of our assistant coaches and get their ideas and don't show them if you're head coach listening, don't show them your answers first. Don't give them any feedback. Don't give them any guidance. Just say, hey, do your best, be as thorough as possible. And you can even do it through a lens of start, stop, keep for every category. So practice, they have a section like practice time or practice over the holidays. What do we need to start, stop, keep doing? So that would be the first thing. The second thing I would do, is send my players a Google form and my staff a Google form and help that drive our off-season meetings. I am a firm believer that you should meet with everybody in your program once a month. So for me, my March meeting would strictly be about wrapping up this past season with, especially with the players, with the coaches, if you wanted to kind of wrap up this past season and talk about next season, completely understandable. With players, I didn't want to look ahead to next year. I feel like at this time, coaches are very quick to flip the switch to next year. So I would keep it centered on this past season. Some questions that I think are valuable to ask players is, one, what's the best part of being coached by me? Two, what is the most difficult part or challenging part of being coached by me? What's working? What's not working? And that could, you could center that towards offensively, what's working, what's not working, defensively, what's work, or you can leave it very open-ended. By leaving it open-ended, you're getting what is like the most pressing issue on their mind. I've shared this with coaches, and some of them say, I won't say who, but some of them say, well, you know, my players are going to put stupid stuff in there. Well, maybe stupid to you, but it's probably really important to them if they're putting it. And even if it's, you know, our pregame meals could be better. Okay, well, if that's the one thing that they're talking about, we can probably make an adjustment there. But two, that probably means you're doing a pretty dang good job if the most important thing that they got going on is the pregame meals. So even if it's not the answers you're looking for, you get a good framework of what they're thinking about. You could also get, I like the question of here's two questions I really like where you can gain a lot of insight. What's not on my radar that should be? And then another one would be, what's one thing you wish I knew about you that would help me coach you better? I feel like that's a really good question to get an insight on them, help build relationship. And I think the Google form is important because it gives them time to reflect on these things instead of just hitting them with it in a one-on-one. It also gives you time to reflect on their answers. And it doesn't mean you have to go through the form. We have like a 4-page form that we send them. If there's some questions that are just like, he gave me obvious answer, don't really need to talk about it, then I just skip it. And I just hit the important points that I think is really valuable for me and that player. So every meeting is going to look a little different. Coaches, they get a lot of the same questions, but I make it obviously geared towards coaches. So one thing that would be different for them was like, what was the most challenging thing about fulfilling your role on staff? Or what was an obstacle that you didn't foresee at the beginning of the year that ended up making it more difficult for you to do your job? I also think at this time of year with coaches, whether they're on your staff or new coaches, is establish mutual expectations. So, Tony, we're going to be working together. This is what I expect from you. I expect you to be in the gym 20 minutes before practice starts and 20 minutes after practice starts. As a result, I will be here 30 minutes before 30, you know, just whatever it is. Like, I expect this of you, and then give you an opportunity of what you expect from me. Let's say I'm the head coach in this scenario. Well, what do you expect from me in return if I'm expecting these things from you? I think a lot of coaches just give their assistants like rules. This is what you should do.
Yeah.
And then the head coach is off the hook, right? Like, I don't have expectations on me because I'm the head coach. I kind of get to do whatever I want. Yeah. Here's one thing that I think head coaches miss the most. And if they could invest time in the off season in this, it would just, I think it'd make a big impact on their coaches, but their program as a whole, is how to mentor your coaches. I find it's the most neglected part of the job description of a head coach is they don't mentor. They, you know, if an assistant messes up or falls short of expectations, then it's just like there's just like friction there, right? Instead of, all right, like, you did this, I think we can, it's not to standard, here's how we would move there. Or hit them ahead of time. Give it, like you said, I expect you to very clearly communicate those with me. Hey, Tony, you're in charge of scouting. This is what I want it to look like. It's March. Hey, by May, I'm going to give you 3 game films. Pretend we were scouting this team, and then let's spend the offseason refining this. So when we get to the fall, there are no surprises. I know you're going to crush scouting. To me, that's being a mentor instead of just giving someone a job. Not that you want to micromanage, but just like you would take a player, we give them a role, but we develop them within that role. I would do the same thing with my staff.
That's good. There's going to be people that want that. Where specifically do you want them to reach out to you?
Mark@savvycoach.com. You can also go to the Savvy Coaching app. We have our own app in the App Store, and go to the roadmap. Bunch of free resources on there, a lot of previews of stuff, and that identity checklist is on there. But I'd be happy to, one, email it directly to you and then hop on a phone call for free. Let's just talk hoops, talk your off season. I had a coach actually reach out last night on Twitter. He said, "Coach, what are some of your thoughts regarding spring and summer hoops for high school programs? How much is too much and how much is not enough?" Great question. I think as coaches, we all go through that. I'll just go through my response. My response is, one, look at your state association rules, right? Like, what are you allowed to do? Then I would break the off season down into like 4, 5, 6 week chunks, because usually you've got this off season, you know, that, like, let's say we're all done, right? We're all done playing. You got like 4 weeks-ish until your spring break. And then you got like 4 or 5 weeks until your exams or end of the season. So then I would have kind of break those down into two segments. And in this chunk, this segment, we're going to cut really deep into strength and conditioning, because my guys need to get away. They're going to play AAU or whatever it is, or they're going to play softball or football. And then after spring break, we're going to move more into the gym, you know, whatever it is. But I don't think you just have to say like, this is what we're doing in the off season. I would break it down in like mini seasons of the off season. So long answer. Mark@savvycoach.com. I'll send it directly to you. I'll hop on a phone call. Happy to go through the checklist with you and give you specific advice for your program.
That's Coach Mark Cassio of Savvy Coaching. Coach, always appreciate you making time.
Thanks, man. This is fun.